think the recording has started now. So, so it's a bit partly based on the scientific methodology course. So based on some of the topics we have covered there, you should actually do a more serious type of research related to your area of study, interaction design. But we've narrowed it down a little bit to what we can call human-computer interaction, so it's not general society and stuff like that we're considering here. We're trying to you will do a study where you actually find a problem, a relevant problem that you can base on some reference in literature, and where you gather quantitative data that we can test out, and where you can write a type of short report based on that. It can be a similar short scientific report as you will, as you find examples of, for instance, in this small paper we wrote on the use of internet-connected devices during lectures. That's a typically short report that's presented on conferences. So that's the output that you will produce. So as I say here, there are a few elements that you should cover. Of course, you need to start out with a topic even before you find literature. But you may have met something already during lectures, for instance, during some classes. There may have been some statements on what is good usability, what makes products usable, that you want to challenge. And that are then topics that you can do literature search on and specify more in detail. Based on that, you should suggest some method to answer the questions that you are asking. You should, of course, also do the data collection and analysis, and then write this paper in the end, as I said. So that's what you're going to do in this course. So we'll get back to what types of experiments this could be. I have some examples here. But if we break this down, we get back to the nice date of October the 31st, where you have a few other deadlines, of course, but consider this as a rather flexible one. But by the next couple of weeks, you should know what to do. That's the point. So I will get to a list. I have more a more detailed list of what you should do and how you should do things later. But I've broken this down based on when the final report needs to be delivered, and that is in the end of the month. I say December the 18th here. There may be an exam date here as well. I'm not sure set. But it's the important thing is that it needs to be done before the end of the year or before the end of the study year. So we're not allowed to drag these types of reports into the next semester. So, and based on this, if we break things down and see how much time we have available, and based this on experiences from previous projects, I'd say that by November the 11th, which is more than 3 weeks from now, well, you should be ready with your plans for the study. And that is something you should write down, because that is something you can reuse when you are writing the final report from the study. So by, as I've said here, by November the 11th, you should have a 2-3 page project description where you refer to the literature and refer that quickly, and state how you're going to investigate the topic that you are investigating. The experiment should then be done by the end of November, so you will have a couple of weeks to do that, which should be okay, I think. Data analysis is also something that takes a bit of time, so that is something you will do with me, probably. There are other possible supervisors than me on this. I may point some of you to, for instance, Sashi or possibly Anders. I'm not sure. It depends on what type of projects we're doing. But you will have, each group will have an assigned supervisor. It's probably me for most of the groups. And then the, as I said, the final report needs to be there by a couple of weeks into December, so before Christmas. So this is roughly the timeline. What could you do? Let's jump a little bit here now. This is an opportunity you have, and one of the maybe not so many opportunities you will have during the study to get acquainted with some very interesting technologies, like, for instance, eye tracking. I'll get back to eye tracking and what types of eye trackers we have available. But this is an opportunity to work with these types of technologies. So keep that in mind. This is a possibility you have to do that, but you can do other things as well. So how do we get to ideas here of what to do? Well, during some of your lectures now, maybe especially in this methods and user-centered design thing you have, Amalia's course, what's the name of the course? Usability in Human-Computer Interaction. So it's not only methodologies, but it's general on usability, right? She's probably, or she's coming up with some statements on what good design is. What makes things readable, understandable, etc. And the literature in connection with that probably also have these kinds of statements in them. So one possibility here, and which is that's a pretty obvious way to try to do research here, is to try to challenge or confirm, for that sake, some of these established facts. Some of these projects have been on areas like this. Reading patterns, for instance. How do we read a web page? Do we all start up left and end up in the bottom somewhere? Or do we have different ways of reading compared to when we read text? So this is stuff that it's easy to find information on. How do the normal reader view a web page or a news page on the web, for instance? Jacob Nielsen and his Nielsen research group has done a lot of studies on that. So you might find something there. Some other topics that have been investigated is on how do we actually see ads? And how do we see them, and what makes ads on the web what makes them catch our attention? Can we do things with positioning, with content, with how they change, for instance, that changes this? And in that context, well, we often refer to a very popular term these days are what we call banner blindness. People have become so used to ads in banners that we actually don't see them anymore. We just ignore them and skip them. Is that true? Well, not always. By using an eye tracker, we can actually catch what they do. Even if they say they don't see it, maybe they see it. Who knows? So these are things we may investigate. Another popular topic in this and in other contexts are, of course, gender differences and other differences that has to do with who we are. Does that affect what we are, what catches our attention, what we read, how we read? Just ideas. Are small displays different from large displays? Do we read mobile phones in a different way than we read content on a normal web page? May have consequences for what type of information we try to put there. These are areas, of course, that had a lot of research has been done on this. So. But it may be important. These are all the first ones here are probably to a large extent solvable by using a technology like an eye tracker and doing a study on an eye tracker. But you could do other things as well. You could do other types of usability experiments and see how that affects outputs, for instance. I've mentioned framing here. Framing is a term used for the context where you do things. So the context you create around what you do may have consequences for the output you get, for instance, from usability studies. One group a couple of years ago did a framing study where they, I may have mentioned it already, they made a situation where they were either friendly or somewhat unfriendly and business-like when they did an usability study where they wanted feedback on an interface they had made, a rather crappy interface that should be getting a lot of feedback and that should be rated as really bad. When they were friendly, gave the participants coffee and sweets and said that this is our product, please could you give us some positive feedback? They didn't say that. Could you give us some feedback? Well, they got a lot kinder feedback than when they were business-like and said they did this as part of a course, an assignment they had to do, and it was someone else's product, and could you please give us feedback? But they were more business-like and not presenting this as their own system. Well, they got very different feedbacks, different types of feedback. So they sampled feedback there on a questionnaire. How many concrete types of feedback did they get? Concrete examples of changes that should be done, the general impression of the product, etc., etc., changed dramatically based on the two situations they created. So that's just an example of another type of study that could be done. And that is, of course, very relevant for usability and interaction design as well. So it's pretty much up to you to find. Of course, I will discuss these things with you, and I may have other ideas when we are discussing this, but the more you can make these ideas into your own, or make these projects into an area, put these projects into an area where you have some interests, the better it is. So I would appreciate it if you discussed this between you in groups before we have the discussion where we try to decide on what project to continue with. As I said, this is an opportunity for you to play with technology that some interaction designers are using nowadays. Not all, but some are, in usability experimentation, and that is eye trackers. Instruments that measure what you are looking at, that have cameras pointing at your eyes, and based on reflections and the position of the pupil in the eye, the what you are looking at is calculated. We have three types of eye trackers available now, which are useful for different purposes. We have down in the basement here a lab, in the color lab, a room there where we have a stationary high-speed eye tracker positioned. It's an instrument where you have put your head on a column, or where your head are fixed. It samples data at very high frequency, 1,000 times a second. And is pretty robust when it comes to how it can handle data and what type of data it can handle or take out of the eye. So it's a pretty nice one. We also have eye tracking glasses, glasses that you can wear, not very heavy, but with a pretty large frame, so the side vision is somewhat impaired. But they can then be used in more, well, you could say the high-track eye tracker is, or the two other eye trackers are used on stimuli that's on the screen. But the these glasses can be used, I could use them here, and you get a following video, so there is a video that follows the movement of the head, and then the what I'm looking at within that video is calculated based on the reflection from 6 infrared lights around the eye and the camera pointing at each eye. So that's a possibility. And we also have a new 250 Hz mobile eye tracker. That's basically a laptop, or it could be used on other devices as well. But it's driven by a laptop computer. But the camera is on a small bar that you put under the screen that you're using to present stimuli. And then you can use that to... It's pretty easy to calibrate. It gives data right away. It's very nice. It's brand new, and you can also use that one. As I said, you may... You may do something else. That's up to you. You can do traditional usability studies. You can do other types of observations. We have a lot of other types of technology available as well. The gaming people here have a lot of interesting technologies that you may want to play with. They have different types of VR equipment, Oculus Rift, HTC Vivo, isn't that what it's called? A couple of them. So they have different types of technologies which you may use for data presentation. Not with eye trackers then. But there may be other outputs you can take from them. So there are different possibilities. And you can do traditional usability studies as the one I mentioned with framing, where you create different situations and measure things on a questionnaire and observation sheets and stuff like that. So you're free to choose this what type of study you do. We have different lab facilities. One of these are in the basement here. A nice room with, two rooms can be connected, so you can do registration or some data sampling in one room and do the eye tracking in the other room, for instance, in the basement here. A010, I think it is, or A0. I don't remember the room number there, but it's in the basement. It's in Color Lab in the basement of the A building. So that's a possibility. Another possibility, if that's relevant, is to use the Universal Designs Lab down at Mysta, the industrial area, on the other side of the main road here. Where they have a full-scale Universal Designs Lab, but also some observation rooms and rooms very well suited for this type of studies. So you, based on your needs, you will get access to these rooms and this technology. But we'll try also to, if you have other requirements, we can assist you on that. I'm talking about things that can be done here on campus. This is a bit more challenging, of course, both the availability of labs and technology for off-campus students. So we need to have discussions on that. Some of these eye trackers, both the glasses and the mobile eye tracker, can be brought elsewhere. So if there is a group in Oslo or something, it has been done before. If you can manage to create a group somewhere else, well, it's possible to do stuff there as well. Those of you who listen to this, it's okay if you contact me and state what types of possibilities there are and discuss what types of possibilities there are to create a project outside campus. Maybe with other students that you can work with. Okay, what to do? You need to establish groups. As I said, there were the list of participants so far in the course is 20-something. 22, I think it was. I want you to establish groups and do this research in groups. There are, it's difficult to do this type of course as an individual thing. It can be done. It has been done before. That's something you will have to discuss with me. I would like you to establish groups. And these groups can be anything from two to, I'd say, five persons. Four to five is maybe ideal for this type of study. Because there is some... it's a little bit challenging to do this type of eye-tracking research. You have to learn to use the eye-trackers. You have to... handle participants. You have to make a lot of stimuli material, maybe. So it's a nice thing to be more than two, probably. So at least, I'd say at least three, but ideally four or five in groups. So I have made groups similar to what we have in scientific methodology in the Blackboard room for this purpose as well. I know there are difficulties in assigning to groups, and if you push the wrong group and assign to that one, you can't get out again and stuff like that. But I can do that. I can do some manual overrun of these things. So don't worry. But try to get into groups with people you would like to work with, and that have similar interests to you. And these groups should then come together before they meet with me and discuss possible projects. A good day to discuss with me will be, for instance, next Tuesday, next Wednesday, at least Wednesday morning. So those are good days to meet me. So I guess you should be able to do something here within a week's time or something. And of course, when you then have ideas, when you have you know what to do, well, try to use some of the don't do just a Google search, but try to use some of the databases we have access to through the library systems. Search for tools like ISI, Web of Science, or similar tools. I'm using that a lot. And try to find literature, try to narrow things down, try to find something that you can base your research on. Some of this can be done before you meet your supervisors, but you should always you should meet with me or possibly with Sashi or Anders within a couple of weeks, so that we have gone through that before October ends. I'm not too strict about October 31st here. I'm just saying that as a date. But considering the time we have available, that's where we should be when this month is over. We should know what we should do. Of course, after that, you need to describe the project and find out what the needs are. What technology will you use? What lab do you need to use? And do some of these ethical considerations. Is this doable within ethically sound boundaries? Are the challenges? Can we do things differently? Do we need to do this as some kind of a deceptive study? And why do we need it? Other ways around it. You have to do some of these considerations. A lot of the studies we are doing, as I mentioned, are by nature somewhat deceptive. We don't tell people a lot of what they're part of before the experiment, because that will destroy everything. And that's very much true with eye-tracking experiments, where we know that we are extremely sensitive to the instructions we're given. Very small changes in instructions will create very different outputs in behaviors. So you need to do this, plan this. And of course, you need to make research material, stuff like that. So I'd say that most of this stuff should be done by mid-November. And then you should, of course, also make information, instructions for participants, make stimuli material, all that follows, plan the experiment in detail. I'm stopping here because after this you will have to do it, of course, and report it. But these are the initial steps you will have to go through. Okay, any questions? Yes? How is it assessed? I think it's a pass, no pass. I'm quite sure I've written it as a pass, no pass thing. So it's an exercise. You should go through this. You should conduct a sound experiment based on theory. So pass, no pass. There is no other way to... There is no individual exam here. So it's only a group project. Okay? That's what I had here. So I'll probably remind the off-campus students of this as well. And if you meet somebody who should be part of this, invite them into your groups and assign two groups in Blackboard. Okay, thanks.